Have you suddenly been overcome with the irresistible urge to wash your potato? Have you opened your eyes and are trying to make sense out of this world you see? Then you come to the right place, the 100th Monkey Radio. Are you the 100th Monkey? What's really going on? Prepare yourself for a journey with Tom and Ramon as we continue our search for the 100th Monkey. If you enjoy what you hear here, guys, you might make sure you become a member. We now have a members tab on the website. Just click on that and it'll take you right to the membership page where you can get signed up. And starting October 1st, all our second hour content is going to be members only. So get on in there, guys. So, Ramon, who have we got tonight?
We have someone who's been on the show before, a very good friend of ours. Somebody who I've had the pleasure to meet and hang out over at East City. Who is this strange person? Renato Longato was born in Lima, Peru in 1961. He studied sociology, law, and political science at Inca Gali. I always have a hard time pronouncing this one. Silasso de Las Vegas Universidad, and is an author, researcher, and lecturer. Renato, welcome to the show once again.
Well, thank you so much, Ramon and Tom. It's good to be with you guys again, you know, through the magic of Skype, and ready to share with you some ideas, conversation, insights, or whatever it comes on the air.
Yeah, so we had you on last December, Renato. What's been going on since then? Quite a bit in my world.
Well, I've been a little bit busy. Started my this year with a lecture for a group of children in a primary school in January this year, which was very, very nice in California to be able to talk to children about what's going on in the world, peace, harmony, and how we can be better human beings. I mean, the children were very receptive. It was very symbolical for me to start lecture with this children this year. Then I was very busy. I was in a lecture in Nashville, Tennessee, in a place called a ranch, Nunnally Ranch in Nashville, Tennessee. There's a group of people who also have over there this kind of a lecture circuits, shamanism, sweat lodge, and it's run by Lee McCormick, a veteran in this kind of ceremonies, and also a person who studied Carlos Castañeda and Don Miguel Ruiz. And after that, I have another invitation to go with Paola Leopizzi Harris, which I'm sure Ramon have heard and you, Tom, have heard of her. She is, you know, the connection liaison with the UFO and Vatican research. And she invited me to a private lecture in March in Boulder, Colorado. And then she did an interview, which the DVDs are available on her website, and lecture about the ET presence as a cultural revolution of the new millennium. That was a private lecture I gave. Then in April, if I'm not wrong, I went to Florida to give a couple of lectures there. And then in May, I embarked in a two-month trip to Europe. I went to the ExoPolitics meeting in Porto, Portugal, as a guest speaker because I'm not a member of ExoPolitics. I delivered a lecture there. Met people from ExoPolitics Denmark, England, Germany. Of course, Porto, Portugal. I was able to visit also the Fatima Shrine and the pilgrim place for the Parisians of Bridging of Fatima, which happened in 1917 on the 13th of May. After that, I went to Austria, and I gave lectures in Vienna, Linz, and Graz, three cities in Austria. And from Austria, I moved to Switzerland, to give lectures in Bern and Zurich. After that, I went to Sweden. I gave lectures in Stockholm. I was supporting a project Energize 2012 in Stockholm on a friend of mine, Elizabeth Egehorn. It's a platform for Indigo and Crystal Children over there. Then in Gävle, which is 2 hours north from Stockholm, I gave a lecture, got an interview over there. And from Sweden, I went to Germany, and Leipzig, which is northeast, if I'm not wrong, from located in that area of Germany, the former GDR Republic, I mean the former communist part of Germany, which people was very open and welcome all this information about ET and shift of consciousness. So I also went to Frankfurt and Berlin, and then I spent some days in Paris, France, came here, I have a private meeting, a yearly private meeting in Newport, which used to be part of these private meetings, the late Dr. John E. Mack, an expert in abductions, and also Bud Hopkins, who passed away 3 weeks ago. He was a member of that group, so I spent days in Newport. And after that, now a few days ago, I just came from Mexico, being invited to a tour and a lecture in Teotihuacan, in a hotel very close to the pyramids of the sun and the pyramids of the moon in Teotihuacan in Mexico City. And I'm back here, back home in the United States.
So your wings must be really tired from flying around.
You know, what really, really is, you know, you have to, yeah, you know that. I mean, it's just to adjust to the jet lag. When you're traveling to Europe, it's 7 hours ahead of us, and then you know different kind of food, different kind of transportation. You know, some people speak English, others don't. Some people speak Spanish, that helps a lot too. So you have to face different weather, climates, people, you know. But I learned a lot, and I met very fascinating people in all these lectures and conference lately, man.
So we got... How are people taking this? I know you said you're getting some really good receptions on these things. I'm seeing more of a shift in consciousness. How is this? How is all the UFO material affecting or helping to open those minds?
Well, that's a good question, Tom. I mean, the people in Europe is a little bit different from America, and of course, different from Latin America. The approach has to be different. You have to show them cases. You have to show them the facts. You have to show them that you've been, you know, we're researchers, and you have done something on the field of research and work. And then they can pay attention to you. And they are not really into the fantastic videos that we are used to seeing on YouTube or on Google, or these amazing hoaxes that sometimes come now and then on the internet. They want to know why are they here and what are they doing and what's next and whatever information, you know, from the United States, but information exactly from the government, what the government had to say about this, what a former astronaut has to say about this, what a scientist has to say about this. They are not prone to believe so easily or to follow any, quote, contactee or person who receives information from ascended masters or, you know, other kind of spiritual communication, as far as my experience counts over there. And the other thing that they want to know is, you know, what we can do, or we can add more into our repertoire regarding the shift of consciousness. What techniques, what insight can you deliver? What kind of message can make them trigger a shift of consciousness for them? So in Europe, it's a little bit different. But I really enjoyed talking with people who have a terrific insight, who are really working for a better future. And most of all, they're very concerned about peak oil. Peak oil, as we know, is not a theory. It's a fact that the production of oil is decreasing lately and gradually within years. And therefore, we're going to be forced to have another wave of energy in order not to suffer from the food restrictions in the near future, plus the weather, you know, weather and climate changes that we're witnessing right now. So that kind of movements are really growing and increasing in Europe lately, you know, and that is what really I was gladly surprised to share with many people over there, Tom. Mm.
Did compared to America, did you find that people are more open-minded to investigate something than compared to America, where there's a lot of really open-minded people in America, but there's also a lot of people who, no matter what evidence you show them, they just won't look. Do you find that to be in Europe, that people are more open than America, or vice versa?
Look, when I was invited to give one of the speakers at the ExoPolitics Europe Summit in Porto, Portugal, the lectures were given on the University of Fernando Pessoa. The dean of the university, or the director,
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He started the lecture. So that gave you know, that.
That would never happen in America.
Yeah. So the dean or the director of the university welcomed us, and even there was a fighter pilot from the Portuguese Air Force who was giving this lecture. And his ties with other American pilots and former astronauts that he's doing his research. There was also another Joaquin Fernandez, also a well-known anthropologist. And he's the second to teach ufology in local universities besides David Jacobs here in America. And he was working on a research about UFOs. And he's going to be the first book printed in Europe. I guess it's already printing in Portuguese about that subject right now. Then you have ExoPolitics Denmark, Robert Uldal. He is a political science and urbanist, and he is, studying the impact of UFOs in our society and the new energy that can be a new source of energy that can be possibly potentially exchanged if there is a contact with sophisticated civilizations. Also, you have a Robert Fleischer from Germany, who have done a tremendous job. I mean, he have like 2,500 or 3,000 followers on his e-magazine, ExoPolitics Germany, that he interviews scientists, researchers, and others as well regarding the sun geomagnetic storms or the possibility of contacts or the information of the latest UFO sightings and interview. He traveled with his own team. All of them are paid. And that guy is really amazing, with Robert Uldal as well from Denmark. And then you have, John Griffith, if I'm not wrong, or David Griffith, if I'm not wrong, from England, who is doing a tremendous job also to educate people regarding this new reality, because just Great Britain released UFO files from the Cold War when Winston Churchill, the former prime minister, was trying to put it on the secret files, all this information, and trying to be released after 30 or 40 years later, which the government have done. So this is a reality, and this is a different approach how you can take the UFO phenomena into more, I would say, academic level, into people can have a dialogue, can transcend the phenomena, and we can understand this reality much better, educating ourselves instead of thinking that we're going to be invaded, that the ETs have come here to as the grace, trying to who knows what. So people having all these weird theories, mostly they have to do with Hollywood movies.
And right.
instead of the big picture. And in that sense, we are missing the big picture, And that's one of the things I can tell you. And I also gave a lecture to the group UFO Sweden in Sweden. And they were very interesting in all this information. It's mostly from Latin America. I was a little surprised. They were looking for more information on the United States, but they were more interesting the information in Latin America, since several air forces from Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Peru, and others are releasing information and open offices to research about this subject. So these are the kind of things I found out during my trips in Europe, my friend.
Well, that's actually quite amazing and at the same time very relieving. But out of all the continents, which one do you think is actually the most open to this to the whole exopolitics and UFOs?
Well, I will, let's separate, you know, let's put UFO first, and then exopolitics is a branch of the ufology, I would say, you know, so I will go for ufology. And the ones that are open, really, and officially open, are the Europeans, you know. You have the Japan, G-E-P-A-N, which is an organization based in Paris, in France, that like 15 or 20 years ago, they released a very good research about UFOs in France, and admitted by high officers, and they worked together with the Belgian Air Forces regarding a well-known case in Belgium like 15 or 18 years ago.
You're then talking about the Cometa report, right?
The Cometa report, yes, exactly. The Cometa report is one of the best reports, you know, available for everybody who wants to know about ufology 101. And then you have, beside Europe, you have, you know, Latin America, which is very open. When you have, like, a, if I'm not wrong, the, I forgot the name of this, Chilean fighter pilot, he's active. He's active in his branch, but he already published a book about incidents of the Chilean Air Force and UFOs. And he has not been, you know, released from his duty. He has not been subjected to any criticism from the press. But all the contrary, he has been received by the open public. He has been received by the media. And he's, you know, his book is being printed. I think it's going to be printing in English soon. So these cases are very rare and unusual, and you won't find here in the United States. Right. That's one of the things. I just came from, let me tell you, I just came from Mexico, and you have the going to be the next 20-year anniversary, 20-year anniversary of the famous and legendary group Los Vigilantes, the Vigilantes, the one, the Sky Watchers, both born in Mexico City. One of the founders was Pascuale Lopresti, which I met lately in Mexico, and this guy have amazing video UFO footage that is well known and other cases to be shown in a special conference and this weekend, I guess, in Mexico City. So the approach is different, and that have to do with the culture. The culture is different in Europe, and the culture is different in Latin America, so the approach to the UFO phenomena is different, therefore.
So what happened to us in America, in your opinion?
You know, the Americans, of course, have a unique background. And even though the ufology was born here and the term flying saucer was coined here in the June 24, 1947 by Kenneth Arnold.
Not too far from Tom, actually.
Yeah, that place is, you know, near, he was flying near Mount Rainier in Washington. And he coined the term when he was flying, you know, flying saucer. He coined the term. When he landed, there were reporters, radio reporters all around him, and he gave this, you know, press saying, you know, yes, I see six or eight of flying saucers. He coined the term. Later on, it was changed into UFO, as we know it. So the modern ufology was born here in the United States. But at the same time, there is really an intent, an honest intent, you know, and pursuit to put pressure on the government to release UFO files, the so-called UFO disclosure. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think this is going to be very difficult for President Barack Obama to do that, or any other president who was being in charge in the White House to do this, because of the all kind of problems that America has right now. We know about it, you know, recession, unemployment, immigration, and who knows what else is coming, you know, here. So I think that's very difficult. I think that there is a good research. There is good magazines with good qualities. There are good seminars and Congress. But the point is that the lack of release that files, UFO files, is that the one that really will be, you know, the will be something that all ufologists in America are dreaming about. You know, they would love to have this to happen like it's happening in Latin America and other countries. Like 22 countries lately have done this around the world. So why not America? Because America had too many secrets. It's a super military power. And they won't release because it's tied to the military industrial complex. So, I mean, since then, you know, intelligence services has infiltrated to several groups of UFO groups, you know, that research about this subject, and, you know, ties with certain people who are insiders that work for the government and informants. So it's very difficult to this happen to here. It happened in 2001 with the National Press Club that was led by Stephen Greer. And there's a, you know, enormous, thick book, you know, titled Disclosure. And you can see all the testimonies from high-ranked officers, personalities, and prominent people, you know, regarding the UFO phenomena as a reality here in America, you know, being seen by several people from the nuclear bases and others as well. But it's very difficult to happen. It's a paradox, really. It's a contradiction that it won't happen here in the United States.
There's a pretty believable testimony out there that we have back-engineered or even been actively assisted by off-worlders in developing technology. What do you think about that?
There's a possibility. I mean, I'm sure everybody talks about IBM, you know, the big corporation company that perhaps received these alleged UFO crash, not only in the United States, but worldwide. And all, whatever was recovered, the debris was recovered, was sent to these corporations with advanced technology, working close to the Department of Defense to find out within the years of research what kind of instruments these ETs were using on their craft. And that's why we have the fiber optics, the microchips, and all those as well. So they use quartz, gold, you know, that is part of the technology used by these aliens that are visiting on Earth. So the possibility is real. I cannot say this happening exactly this way, but I can tell you that there were units, I would say unknown group of units, teams, people that have been deployed in different countries when there has been a UFO crash, alleged UFO crash, and they're trying to recover it immediately. Or NASA scientists flying over the different places, making good donations to the local population or to the local cities or school just to pick up whatever debris or meteorite or asteroid, whatever is falling from the sky and is under the agenda to be an issue of interest. So that possibility is open, Tom.
Yeah, I just see since the 40s, our technology exploded so rapidly then, and our explosion in our modern technology all happened right in the same era that the quote unquote Roswell and the Kenneth Arnold and all that stuff started. I just see a real closely parallel path there between the appearance of UFOs in our world on a conscious level like that and the growth of our technology.
I think in the branch of telecommunication, I think this is one of the things that really receive a boost from UFO crashes. Don't forget that we're talking about all the military weapons of mass destruction as well, or satellites. I mean, that means that Russia and China and the British were able also to recover some debris of UFO crashes around the world. Because if not, the United States would have only the supremacy in this field, which is not possible. So I think in telecommunication, there is a possibility that had benefit the United States and in that matter, because, I mean, it's the most intercommunicated, integrated country in the world. And that's one of the things that have helped the development of cell phones, have helped the development of radio transistors, have helped the development of calculators, or you name it now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a vast array of benefits that from one or two research that could have been done secretly under the Department of Defense and big corporations like IBM.
Yeah. I always wonder what if most of the crafts that are being seen around the world, what percentage of those crafts are actually American or Russian or who knows what other countries may have them. And what percentage is off-world or inner-world or other dimension? Any information that you found in Europe that, like, any investigations into to earthly, let's just call them earthly crafts?
Well, not exactly, to tell the truth. You know, to be sincere, that I didn't find. I mean, they are very down-to-earth, very logical, pragmatical, and they are very concerned, as I said, you know, about peak oil and other related energy problems, because Europe is not as, you know, it's not a big continent. You know, it's old, but not big in extension or mass land extension, I would say, and we all know it. They were more concerned about, you know, how's going to be the cultural impact of a communication with these extraterrestrial, how it can affect diplomatic relationships, how it can affect the geopolitical situation in the world, how it can affect, you know, our society, how it can benefit our society, what we can gain about this, what we can offer in exchange, how we can educate more people, not the mass, which already the people, the mass, I would say, you know, is with high percentage, believe in the presence of UFOs and ETs, you know, in outer space, but of the authorities who are, you know, really, really reluctant because of political and economic agendas, that they don't want to touch this because it's a hot potato, really. So, you know, talking about technologies, really, they are not into that. You know, they want to educate people, and they want to educate the political class in their countries, and they want to give, you know, the best information available. And they are information. The thing is that people are opening more their minds and opening more, you know, into this new reality, which is a fact. We've been visited, not now, also before. So the approach had to be different, have to change within time. And the sign of changes is already in Europe, really. It's very interesting, you know, the way they're doing things. It's not an easy process. It's a step by step. I had to be very patient, but not bad at all. I really enjoyed talking with these guys from different groups, not only in the exopolitics branch, I would say, but also in Sweden and in Germany. You know, they're very open to this, really. And in France, well, forget about it. You know, the French people, most of them, are aware of this. And also they're aware, you know, that there is an ongoing study and research by the Japan, as I mentioned earlier in this interview, and the research doing, you know, with the support of the local authorities. And that's the way which it should be done. That's the way it should be done, because that's the way to confront this reality and how to calm down, orient the people when these things are coming. The Philosophical Society of England, just months ago, releases information about the need from the leaders of the world to have a protocol and terms and conditions how to proceed after an alleged visitation from an alien civilization on Earth or communication. If you were not going to think about this and they caught by surprise in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years, I don't know that, nobody knows that, you know, better to start now. And these are scientists from the Philosophical Society of London, which started in the 1800s with Isaac Newton as the founder. So these are not people who are just, you know, trying to get some publicity or marketing to their institutions or companies. These are real scientists. These are people who are interested in this. As a matter of fact, there's a philosopher, I forgot his name right now, I'm sorry, in England, that he is looking very carefully any information from Mars, any information from us, because he thinks the possibility that Mars, the red planet that we is our next door neighbor in the solar system, could be really a cemetery. Could have had life before, intelligent life. And then we're looking through the telescope, we're sending probes, we're sending other devices to research that on the surface of Mars, that we can find, besides water, other microorganisms and perhaps another material objects that can tell us that there was life, intelligent life, societies, civilization that collapsed and that was wiped out for some unknown reason there. So we're looking to a cemetery. Perhaps this is a message for the humans. What could happen here if we don't get, you know, self-sustainable, or we don't protect our ecosystem? Could it happen to the Earth? That what could happen before to Mars? So that's a very interesting approach. I mean, that's a big difference, you know. And you have these intellectuals and scientists working on this. This tells you something. They are looking forward to the possibility of a potential contact, you know, with a alien civilization in the near future. Could be wrong, could be bad, could be good. There are others, like in the NASA lately, saying that it could be wrong, it could be positive, or it could be neutral. They can stop by, say hello, but they don't care about us, and they continue the trip beyond the cosmos. Others, they can, you know, control us or our natural resources, and who knows what. I wonder if they had done that before. Or they can come here in peace and try to establish, you know, certain coherent, organized terms and conditions to contact us. And who's going to contact? Fiji? Are they contact Haiti? Are they going to contact Jamaica? Not because they're not, you know, countries that we respect. They're going to contact the United States. And what is the United States going to say? It's going to do?
Yeah, well, what if we've already been contacted quite a few years ago?
You know, probably.
There's quite a few lecturers out there who supposedly have experienced things or have the inside information about Mars, in particular about there already being a human colony on Mars. You know, us having a jump room, having the jump room type technology out there already.
I personally don't believe that.
Yeah.
First of all, you need to have oxygen. You have all these people. I heard that theory before. That to have oxygen, to have all these people there. That people may have an ecosystem similar to the Earth. If not, they will get nuts. They will get crazy. Then the other thing is a very simple thing. What is the sewage system, the trash system, the dumpster system? That there's no evacuation or anything exhaustion on those subterranean bases on Mars. Those simple questions cannot be answered completely. And it belongs to the realm of possibilities that we have a human troops or marines or whatever being teletransported to Mars. I respect that, but I personally don't believe so. You know, the major satellites, even satellites that can search here on Earth, you know, minerals, oil deposits as well, they can track very easy subterranean underground bases here on Earth. They not only belong to the United States, they belong to China, Russia, Brazil, you know, England, you know, another South Korea and other countries. And they can easily detect any rocket or any other device that can teletransport or help to teletransport humans in such quantity on Mars. I mean, it's very difficult to have a structure, a superstructure that allow humans to live very organized, you know, in Mars.
What if it's not human and it's... Because, I mean, if I came to this solar system and, you know, I want to study Earth, but I know how Earth people might react to me being there, then I'll go to the nearest place I can go to, which will either be Mars
or our moon.
Well, you know, it could be, you know, it could be right here, you know, in California. It could be right here in the Andes. It could be right here in Africa, in the beautiful rainforest or national parks. You know, there could be places where there are, you know, extraterrestrial bases, but, you know, possibility that makes sense instead of, you know, having in Mars or the moon. You know, any astronomer, even amateur astronomer, should have caught that on their telescope. But where is the news? Where is the news? The rest, it sounds like science fiction. Very interesting, very nice, It triggers our emotion. That's what's happening right now. There are so many conspiracy theories, guys. Let me repeat this. There are so many conspiracy, virtual conspiracy theories, because they exist on the internet. They don't exist in reality. Because if you or me or Tom find out about real conspiracy, Tom's life will be in danger. Because a conspiracy is that. And it's very, 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 very serious. It could endanger your life. You know, but if you want to believe in virtual conspiracy, you can get lost on the internet and find the next one. It's going to be a meteor coming down. It's going to be the planet Nibiru or comet Elening or the next earthquake or HARP or this and that. The never ending. What is HARP? What's happened with HARP right now? There are so many earthquakes around the world. Now HARP is silent. To think that we were at the mercy of a transnational group of mind scientists that whenever they want, they shoot these waves and create these earthquakes artificially. What happened to the earthquake here in Arkansas lately? You know what happened to the earthquake in Japan? That was HARP? Oh, you know, I think that the conspiracy theory erodes the credibility on the media, erodes the credibility on federal institutions, erodes the credibility on the scientific community. And that is a fault of also the scientific community not to take a serious approach about these issues, about the ET presence, way before. So they created a gap. They created a gap, a vacuum, so everything can grow. If you open the door of your house and let anybody to come in, then you cannot control your house, your own home. The same way, you have all these unbelievable theories they're telling us, and then you look a couple of years later, they are not anymore, you know, they're not anymore going on the internet. What happened? Was replaced by another one. And the other one is more exciting because it triggers your emotional response. It jumps over your common sense and critical thinking. And where we are bombarded like never before by iPod, Blackberries, computers, whatever you want to name it, you know, with this information that really, really, you know, does not allow having time to have a critical thinking. So everything is possible now. Everything is right now is coming back, and people get into this emotional thing that is something beyond our possibilities. And that distracts us because we're missing the big picture. The big picture here is that we need a shift of consciousness because we're living in a transcendental changes like never experienced before in human history. But no, we want to know about HARP. We want to know about travels to Mars. We want to know about this. I respect all the stuff. But I personally don't believe so.
So, what in the last, let's say, 10 months, have you seen a small or an exponential growth in consciousness amongst the places you've traveled, even here in the States?
Well, definitely, because the good news are not news. My dear friend, you know that. You're in the radio. You know, you're talking with people who are trying to do their best as human beings to trigger or to help others to grow in their own way. And it's better to do something instead of do nothing and talk about things. You know, it's important to be aware, but it's determinant to act, to have action, you know. So, yes, I was, as I telling you before, in Europe, there were growing interest and they're growing interest in organic agriculture, which is good because in Europe, they sell gasoline by liters, a liter.
Yeah, same as here in Japan.
Yeah, well, it's super expensive, man. It's super expensive. Everybody, most of the people drive bicycles. Or like in Japan, they drive bikes or motorcycles, whatever. And they have a good transportation system. You know, they don't have big trucks or, or Hummers or SUVs. You know, it's different. At the same time, they are aware that they depend on the food transportation system is getting more expensive and expensive. And they're concerned about Greece, Finland, Portugal, Spain to default. Because if that defaults, it will really create a cascade, a domino effect that will also, you know, include France. And I was talking to an engineer in Paris, in France, before I came here. And he was really concerned about the economy, you know, in France. If France start to have a severe crisis, he told me, no country in Europe can help France with a bailout. And that's what they are concerned about. That's also their concern, their local concern. When you know, they don't ask too many things about the United States, because I've seen the United States have their own problems, we have our own problems, you know. But they are more concerned into that. They are also looking to healthy way of lifestyle. There is a big movement to eat healthy, to do exercises, to reduce weight, you know, to not to be a burden for the social security, to eat healthy, and that's a big change. That's a big change. That's a big change in consciousness. It's not only to talk about spirituality, it's also to be physically fit and trying to be mentally, you know, healthy. So the three, you know, the three levels of the human being, you know, mind, body, and spirit. So I was invited in a community, and 2 hours from Leipzig, and in this community there were like 8 people were living there. They had their own organic garden. Even though at the very beginning was very difficult, they already through the years they have achieved a stable way to sustain. Almost to sustain themselves. Of course, they go to the grocery store, but you know, it was very good to share with them. You know, every afternoon we came down to the garden, and they have these huge salads, veggie salads with them. They just get it from their organic garden. So that's a good way to get it. You know, and if you incorporate a philosophy or whatever you are, you believe, you know, religion or philosophy into your lifestyle. Therefore, you're making a change, and that's what I experienced in Germany. In Sweden, there is a group, you know, they're looking forward to live in a community all together, and they're working to establish a non-profit organization to do that. So these are the things that I encounter. They're positive things. People are open and understanding to these changes, and therefore they're doing their best to collaborate, you know, with the local government as well. So I mean, these are, you know, if these are changes, and these are changes that need to be a look or perhaps copy somehow in other part of the world, their own way, their own system, or their own way of living, and that's the people that are working. I'm sure that's happening also in Japan, my friend.
Yeah, there's a lot of little farms all over the place, but it's always been like that because compared to America. They haven't let the little farms haven't let themselves been taken over by big companies, but it's starting to happen now. So, but I was going to ask you, compared to America, for example, when people try to form like little organic communities, there's always these stops. Like in certain states in America, you can't collect water. Rainwater, you can't collect rainwater, or certain people have been, given fines for selling organic food?
Depending, I mean, I haven't heard those cases, but in general terms, you know, there are people who, you're going to sell organic food, you know, I mean, you have to have a certain certification. You have to have, of course, certain rules and certain terms and conditions to do so. So I mean that it cannot be applied to all the states of this big country, you know. So far, the West Coast is the leading place in all this organic movement, mostly. And you have, you know, the Upper East Coast also in leading in permaculture organic as well. You know, the southern states are not doing this so well, you know. I don't know the reason, really. But at the same time, you know, these groups are getting into a network, and that they exchange information. And one of the best websites that I can recommend is www.postcarbon.org, which not only teach people about the reality and the consequences of peak oil, but also the positive link between community, authorities, and households related to community gardens, organic gardens, You know, I forgot to mention something. In Berlin, in Germany, a former landstrip, or airstrip, I would say, you know, it was used to be rent by the city to the local dwellers nearby, but in order to cultivate organic produce. And they can be supported with irrigation, and they can give the leftovers to the other local markets or to the food bank. And that works completely well there. It works completely well. So the idea of creativity, the ideas, the creativity, and the new ways of organization within the community, local leaders, authorities, are doing, you know, their best, and they are working. So you have people from different backgrounds, Vietnamese, from India, Latin America, and locals from Europe. They have grown different kind of produce that benefit the whole community. And this is a very welcome project in Berlin.
So have you run across anybody that's been doing any research or work on some of these free energy devices, or even, you know, the hydrogen, the water converters, water to hydrogen converters, and that sort of thing?
No, Tom, to tell you the truth, I haven't been in touch with people that are doing that.
Yeah, go ahead, Ramon.
No, I was going to say anything on the, because I know in Italy there were the whole cold fusion thing. Was, when you were in Europe, was there any mention of that?
No, not really. That part of the group of scientists coming and who are really ahead of that, and they have the specific information. And so far, I haven't been in touch with that level of information, really. You know, I've been with people who are working on organizations, one-to-one contact and networking. I mean, we'll say groups, non-profit organizations, and social networking. And they are the ones who are doing and proposing these changes. Local government, the level of local government, you know, there are some research, of course. And I think one of the countries who are considered the greenest country in Europe is, and the city, which, excuse me, considered the greenest city in Europe, is Stockholm in Sweden. Because there are laws that provide, you know, certain specifications to create these green areas. At the same time, they're looking forward to less, you know, pollution and to educate people in that way. It had to do with education, my friends, you know. But if you're talking to me about the fusion energy and how they can do with this kind of alternative energies, you know, I haven't been in touch with that kind of organizations or people.
Yeah. I know I've watched a documentary on Stockholm, and I know they use ocean water to air condition most of the buildings. Like, they run the air through a pipe down deep into the water and then bring it back into the city, and found it like a lot cheaper way than using regular air conditioners. It's not as costly.
Well, they depend. The thing is, in this case, I mean, glad you mentioned that, because as far as I know, they depend of gas from Russia. That's not a good thing for them. They depend of oil from Russia. That Lithuania, Finland, and Sweden depend of gas and oil from Russia. You know, Norway have oil reserves, but it's decreasing. The Black Sea, I call it, Black North Sea, you know, it's decreasing the oil production, the oil riches under the sea. They are decreasing. That's why they want to go to the North Pole. And, you know, now that the ice is melting, trying to get more oil, they're desperate to get more oil as fast as they can. You know, but at the same time, they cannot depend on energy from another country. And that's why they're using these new techniques. They're working on that. Besides that, you know, it's different. In Sweden, you have winter time. It's like, you know, brutal winter times there. You know, the people practically, they go to work and they stay in their house. They don't go anywhere else, you know. And of course, the consumption of energy is different and higher. We cannot compare that. But at the same time, they are working fast and furious to accommodate to the changes that is happening right now because they're using the budget for research and development. And I'm afraid because we were in two wars, you know, we are in Iraq and then we're in Afghanistan and we're not aware officially, but we're in Libya. You know, we're spending billions of dollars, you know, the last 8, 9 years, 10 years, you know. And that's why get away from the, you know, from the research and development and being leader in technology and alternative energies here, you know, in the world. So that's happening also. But at the same time, the problem is this, that peak oil has come in the worst time because peak oil has come in the time of recession.
I want to give you a chance. We're coming up on the hour for BBS, so I want to give you a chance to – did you have the new book come out yet? Because I remember the last time you were on, you said you were working on a book.
No, with these 2 months I spent in Europe, I delayed my book. I am doing more research, as a matter of fact, and it gave me the opportunity to do more research. And I think I'm going to have my book in January next year. As I said before, the book is titled E.T. Presence, USA, E.T. Presence and New World Views. You know, so that's what I'm working right now. And it helped me to be in other countries to do more research and to contact people who are, you know, seriously working on this. And it was a good moment to delay, you know, my book, even though many people are asking me, you know, when I was in Mexico, say, Renato, what's your book? I said, well, I got to wait a little bit more because I had more and better information too. So I had to be patient with myself, even though I like to be, you know, seeing printing my book as soon as possible. But it's part of the art of patience. Had to wait a little bit more, my friend.
What's your website?
www.renatolongato.com, RENATOLONGATO.com. I'm on Facebook, you know that. So if someone wants to contact me, welcome, you know.
Yeah. Are you speaking anywhere soon?
Well, I have an invitation. I have to go to Arizona soon. I'm in conversations right now. But then in November, I have slowed down a little things because I have many things to do here in the United States. But in November, I'm going to be in the 11-11 event in L.A. And it's a group of friends that have this event, and I'm going to be one of the guest speakers in this event. As we know, 11-11 is a very interesting number, and it's only happened, you know, once in a lifetime. So this is something that I'm looking forward to be. And it's run by Dream Shield organization, led by Ken Sheets. And if someone is on Facebook, they can, you know, contact me, and I can send you all the information for the Ascension Convention on 11-11-11 on LA, right here on California. No.
So we're going to get off now and make sure you catch us at www.thehundredthmonkey.com for part two with Renato. But before then, make sure you tune in to Brooks Agnews coming up next. And then come check us out at the archive.
And condemnation, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. Love you guys.
Have a good night. Thank you.